Hi, I'm Anne Hilferney, and this story is called Big Shout to Malmi Hatchman. Get near and listen up, because I haven't got much time. I've been watching you for a while, but hear me out and I think you'll understand. I'm Fenton, who used to be an architect at the town hall, and I'm going to tell you about Hatchman, the odd job man there all those years ago. Truth is, nobody really knew what Hatchman was all about. He was a creature of that brick warren, its covert entrances, spike gates, portals and hidden rooms behind the bookcases. A rare sighting heralded by the slow drag of his feet would excite comment. I saw that Hatchman just now sloping off to his lair, but I collared him to get me a brew. Do you think a tanner was over-egging it a bit? Nah, he's an old soldier. Let him be. Not quite town hall mascot, more an elemental or a familiar that those peer-end spiritualists used to talk about. Hatchman had a shonky leg. Actually, I think that's how he ended up at the town hall, by being a batman to some Herbert in the war. Services rendered and all that. Give the lad some tin and a token retainer now we've lamed and broken him. You could tell he was a man who'd fought to keep his sanity. He'd just about managed it. But there was something about the way he cleaved to the earth that made you think it was a desperate struggle for him not to cast adrift and float away, thoughts bobbing and whirling like thistledown, bouncing on the Albert Square cobbles, catching on the stone whiskers of Mr. Bright or Mr. Gladstone before floating free and away over Manchester forever. That's why Hatchman's slithering, shuffly feet never left the ground when he walked. He was afraid. When he reached the steps, he'd hesitate and peer around as though gauging how long he would be suspended, one foot free of its anchor, then with a perceptible girding of his loins he'd be off, skittering from step to step like a spider, as though to get the dreaded moment over with. I was intrigued by the old duffer, by his almost disassociated presence, and took to making excuses to talk to him. That is, I'd talk foolishness and he would gaze at the floor and murmur. They paid him little enough. It got him a room in a lodging house with others who were only one step away from the gutter, somewhere in Hume, I think. Fag and beer money came from his errands, some kosher, some decidedly hooky, but one flash of his campaign medals, always worn under his waistcoat, and the most hard-bitten copper would turn a gruff blind eye. I asked him once how he imagined his life would have turned out if the Great War hadn't intervened, and he smiled. Building a city. Oh, was your father a bricklayer then? Nah, what father? I mean dreaming cities up, drawing them, seeing them rise out of me and out of the earth, and then touching the skies. I checked my guffaw just in time. You wanted to be an architect? Good God. What do you think I do of an evening? I've no schooling, so I have to use my eyes and ears. Careless talk and all that. Papers left around. I listen to them in their offices and look at their drawings. I'm the sad dog in the corner that gets in their scran and dirty magazines so they take no notice of me. The city's my university. Every building I see is the conceit of man made flesh, the wrong'uns, good'uns, tombs for the living and palaces to go to the devil in, gables, domes, turrets, chimneys, proscenium arches and flying buttresses, gargoyles, goddesses, saints and heroes. The words were spewing out of this silent, austere man, a litany of architectural ephemera, the detritus of Manchester's aspirations. The measurements, the styles, the quirks, the failures, the triumphs. He trailed off and sagged as though sated and exhausted. I must have looked both astonished and a little vexed, as with a mixture of shiftiness, defiance and some underlying neediness, he said, I can show you if you like. What, you still draw? Nah, curtain man doer. I vaguely recognised the name of the Brigantine Queen, ancient founder of this city whose settlement was just down in Castlefield. Still, I had no idea what Hatchman was really on about. So I followed him. down corridors, through doors, a spiral staircase and another corridor. Musty air, mildewed paper, grimy cases half covered in sacking, ancient tarnished paraphernalia of state piled in a corner heap. There wasn't a living soul about, just a clammy stillness, broken only by the rasp of Hatchman's feet along the flags and the reek of his filthy roll-up. The end of the corridor loomed, apparently bricked up long ago. On the left, a wooden staircase disappeared into an almost palpable blackness. Hatchman disappeared into the alcove beneath and threw aside a heap of discarded Hessian. I saw him bend, release a bolt with difficulty, and hoist a trapdoor that was flush with the grimy flags before vanishing from sight and flicking a switch, which created enough light for me to grope my way forward and down the ladder. Hatchman waited at the bottom and motioned me towards the room with a courtly sweep of the hand that was almost poignant in its mixture of defiance, pride and fear that I would laugh or mock. Words, by one profane expletive, failed me utterly. Instead of the glory hole or cluttered den that I'd been expecting, I was in a large, fusty, vaulted room. It looked as though it may have once been a wine cellar or even the bowels of a church. I gazed transfixed upon Hatchman's utopia. Kartimandua spread before me, all 50 feet of it receding back into the darkness. It overwhelmed any concept of space or sense, glorious, celestial, impossibly gorgeous and utterly deranged. The model, its edifices painted in uniformly creamy or roseate colours, Hatchman favoured good local sandstone and marbles, shimmered in the uncertain light and drew you into it like a whispered promise of impossible rapture. "That's my heaven. That's where I'll go when my day comes. Do you know that the old plague pit and graveyard of St. Peter surrounds us down here? The folk who never made it. Thousands of them all pressing their faces into the loam trying to see this, their new Manchester, the one the bastards wouldn't give them. This is for them and for all the ones who fell at Peterloo, just over there. And when my day comes, we'll all live together in Kartimandua. Safe. Always safe." He said this quite rationally. It was his life, I suppose. 35 years in the making. He perched on the edge of his pleasure gardens in Shudhill and told me how these Manchester souls had guided his hand, whispering to him, the breath they left behind brushing his cheek and alerting him to their presence. The delusion had consumed him like a looming fungal edifice feeding off his loneliness and the broken dreams of all those crowding in around us. It would suck him dry, that much was obvious. His eyes never left New Manchester's loveliness. There was a febrile excitement about him, and he repeatedly wiped his hand over his mouth in agitation. I never let on what I discovered, out of respect for the old man, and he knew I never would, because I too had been seduced. This underground city tormented me every day. My jealousy spurred me into sending my assistant out on a daily basis to find Mulmy and to my making spurious excuses to venture down below. I prostituted and defiled New Manchester, stealing bits piecemeal and incorporating them into my soulless edifices. Mine were built to order, for dead-eyed, speculating whores enthralled to their venality. There was no trace of Mulmy's soul, his passion and visceral genius. He saw and never said a word. I tipped him generously, both out of shame and also fear that the holder of the key would withhold it forever. So the years passed. I was promoted and grew sleek in my prosperity. Mulmy, however, diminished to the point where I grew alarmed. He could barely manage the arduous climb to my chambers and would have to sit, gasping and bent forward, face over his knees. I hadn't seen him for 3 days and could barely concentrate on my work. A shuffling foot would send me spinning round in my chair, only to startle a colleague. "Sorry, Fenton, didn't mean to spook you, old boy." I kept prevaricating, telling myself all was well, but I knew there was only one thing to do, even though it felt monstrously profane. I would break into the vault. It was an interminable day as I waited twitchily for dusk, the building resonant and deserted except for some cleaners on the lower floors. It was easy to slip down to the cellars unseen. I rapped on the trapdoor out of form's sake, rather than with any real expectations, and of course there was no answer. I tugged at the iron ring, realising what a racket I would make if forced to break in, but unexpectedly it opened. I'd rather not dwell on the rest. I don't know what you would have done. I couldn't find the light and switched on my torch, feeling increasingly vexed at Malmy's refusal to answer my calls, as I knew he had to be there. Kurt Mandua glowed in the murky light. I fancied I saw the treacherous old queen herself squatting there in her white gown, a bloody leer on her face. But as my eyes adjusted, I realised it was Malmy, cruciformed across New Manchester, his head thrown back across the smashed glass dome of the Brigantia Temple, where his arms were cradled in the topmost branches of the trees within. The smiling gash of his throat was horribly exposed. It had sprayed his blood over spires and turrets, leached it into the walls and flags, poured it down the sides of villas, mansions and cottages, then gouted it into the avenues and boulevards before finally decanting into the Irwell, Irk and Medlock. There were strange gusty breezes in the room, but nowhere they could have come from in this hermetic bunker. A terrible charge strung out the air. It galvanised me into throwing myself on Malmy's rigid body to tear and claw at his clothes. I found the key in his hand and prized it out. 10 minutes later, I left the building. They never found Malmy, and nobody ever thought to check the room because they had no idea it existed. I certainly didn't tell them. After a few days, people stopped talking about him, and I imagined his thistledown soul drifting in bliss over this tired old city. I never entered, never could enter the room again, but the key hung in front of my desk like a fetish for me to gaze at sometimes for hours at a time, my portal to the mystery. When I retired, it hung round my neck night and day. I am the keeper of secrets and of Malmy's soul. Here is the key. Because I'm done and you are the living breath of New Manchester. I know in my heart that it's all a delusion created from whispers of the dispossessed, but cherish it nonetheless. Cherish the dream.